Presenting a proven way to build your endowment with a sustainable gift planning program, this is the Gift Planning Development Podcast, an ongoing forum designed to help you meet all of your gift planning goals.
Hi, it's the Gift Planning Development Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Tumalo. Topic today is one that is really on a lot of people's mind. It feels like people are always getting ready to do it, doing it, or just did it and getting ready for the next one. And that is, of course, capital campaigns. And so a lot of competition out there. It feels like everyone is vying for the same donor dollars. I've talked to clients who aren't sure if it's time for a capital campaign and they don't even want to spend the money yet to even figure that out yet. So there's a lot. It's a big expense, of course. It's a big time and resources, and it really, there's a lot at stake. So it's really important that you know what's involved, how to be successful, and what you can expect. And my guest today is one of the eminent gurus on capital campaigns, and that is Peter Heller from Heller Fundraising Group. Peter, hello.
Good morning, Joe.
Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
I'm very happy to be here.
And you've been doing
it at home in my office in Manhattan.
In Manhattan, on Broadway, you said?
On Broadway.
How cool is that? So do you go to the theater a lot?
No, I'm on Upper Broadway.
Upper Broadway.
Theater is way down in a different world.
Way down. Okay. Well, I'm so glad that you could share all the things you've learned. You've been doing this a long time. Did you work at five universities?
One college and four universities, yes. Most recently, although it was 15 years ago, I worked at Columbia University here in New York for 10 years. It was an amazing experience, and I was then ready to do something different and wanted to work for myself.
Well, and you've been incredibly successful. I've been watching your growth and your success, and you're adding people and just doing great things for people.
Thank you. We're also having fun. My team, which is now six of us, we just have gone through an exercise of figuring out what the purpose of our company is as part of our company culture. We determined that it's building abundance.
Very nice. And so, you know, there's a lot to talk about in the relatively short time we have for the podcast about capital campaigns. What do you think would be most helpful to chat about to our listeners?
Well, I'd like to start with a list of six things that are crucial. You were saying there's competition and there's confusion maybe sometimes about when and how to do a campaign. And even those who are ready and want to do one, there's basically six things that we work on with all of our clients, whether they're doing pre-campaign planning or they're doing a feasibility study or they're actually in the campaign. These are the six things that need to be in focus and alignment to make sure that you're going to have a strong campaign. So if you like the idea, I'll just quickly list them.
I love lists. Yeah.
And say just a word or two about each one, because I've actually done full day workshops at the Foundation Center on all six of these. So you can imagine, you can get into deep details. And just as a quick plug, I'm doing a full day workshop again at the Foundation Center in New York in October on these six. So here we go. I should probably quiz you, but I'll make it easy. I'll just
don't make me look bad here.
So and these are also, they're on our website, the HellerFundraisingGroup.com for anybody who wants to look them up. So number one is the dollar goal. It's an obvious thing that you need to know how much you're going to raise in order to have an effective campaign. You'd be surprised perhaps at how many people are super vague on that, even though they want to do a big campaign. The second thing is the case for support, which, of course, you wrap the dollar goal into that, but you need a really powerful story about your organization's future in order to have a successful campaign. And I'm going to get into that after this list, as it's one of the most important things for raising your biggest gifts in a campaign. In addition, so that's number two. Number three is you need a campaign steering committee made up of probably board members and other people in the community. Number four is very obvious, but we got to put it on the list. It's your prospect list. Obviously, without a really robust prospect list, you're not going to have a strong campaign. So we help people figure out whether they have enough prospects and the right prospects to start that campaign and actually complete it.
So let me just stop you there for a second.
Sure.
So when you say prospects, right, how do we define prospects versus current donors, or are you using them, using that term? Are they one and the same?
Yeah,
or they could
great
be both?
Question. So, you know, I sometimes I think that prospects is kind of a little bit of a derogatory term, like dehumanizing people in a way. But these are potential donors to your campaign who, in an ideal world, they've been supporting you in various ways for many years. And I think every campaign has some new donors. But if you're counting on a whole group of people who are not at all engaged in your organization to support you with millions of dollars, you've got some serious work to do before you can do a campaign.
Right. And that's a huge point, because, and we have listeners to this podcast at all different levels. We have volunteers that are kind of new to fundraising, board members. We have organizations that are just getting started. So, you know, for established shops, people that have been doing this a while, that's probably common sense. To your point, though, for people that are new to it, yeah, to try to expect to get a list. Oh, well, we have a consultant. He said he's going to bring us 100 names of people.
Oh, please don't do that.
Know, right?
Please do not.
Yeah, yeah. But people just don't know. They don't understand that. That's
right. Yeah. So one of the interesting things about this list of six things, again, we got dollar goal, case, committee, prospects. I'm going to give you the other two in a minute, is that your prospects and your dollar goal are intimately connected, meaning that once you figure out how much you need to raise, you want to do some metrics around that, usually using a gift table tool that will then tell you how many donors and how many gifts and prospects you need at each level. And then you can analyze the reality of what your current prospect base is versus what you need. And you can see very quickly and clearly whether you have a lot of work to do in that particular item of building a prospect list, or you're set in that and you simply need to go out and tell your story.
Mm. Good stuff.
Yeah. So I'll give you the other two items. Number five is what we call systems and staffing. You know, we can come up with a beautiful case for support and dollar goal and put your committee together and you know, just put something that really looks wonderful together. And then we find out that you don't have anybody minding the store who has the time and attention and skill set to run this campaign. And people often think that consultants will run it for you. There are some companies that lead their lives that way. We tend to think that that's an enabling strategy, that the more you can have people inside who are doing this, the more that at the end of the campaign, you're going to have more than dollars. You're going to have a stronger organization.
So, right. So it's not, I think people think of a campaign as a one-time event, right? It's not, it's a journey. It's one stop on the journey, to your point, that you're building. Yes, we're going to get the jackpot, the money at the end. But to your point, right, we're developing people, we're changing the culture, we're setting ourselves up for the next level of fundraising and doing more for the people we serve.
Absolutely. And I'm going to give you one of my secret questions right now, even though we're only a few minutes into this whole thing, which is, are you ready, by the way?
I'm nervous and excited at the same time.
Okay, good. So I encourage any nonprofit that we talk to about a campaign to think about, put themselves in the mindset that the campaign has ended successfully, meaning that they've raised the money they need for whatever project or programs they're working on. But what is the campaign going to create for you other than the money that you needed to raise?
Mm, well said.
That's an exciting question, because that's creating a stronger organization by virtue of the campaign. And we'll get into the how you raise the money for that in a few minutes. But there's a lot of interesting things tied in with that.
Can you say that? I always like to, point or question to repeat it just so it sticks.
I'll try to say it the same way. I can't promise it's going to be the same words. You ever had the problem? People are like, oh, that was great. What'd you say? And I'm like,
I have no idea.
I don't remember. So put yourself in the mindset that your campaign has been completed and you've raised the money you need. What else will the campaign have created for your organization other than the money?
Beautiful.
So whether it's an 18-month campaign or a 3-year campaign, what's going to be happening at the end there? And that's I want to talk about the future of organizations because that's really a key to that. Let me just finish up this list. So on that systems and staffing thing, when we talk about systems, we're talking about various online platforms and documents and templates, as well as staff, volunteers, and consultant communication strategies, so that you can get this done. I've had we're working with one organization now that they have an amazing mission, and we're getting ready to do a feasibility study. But it's clear that their staffing and systems are just so not ready that even if I go out and interview 50 people and find out they can raise the $20 million they want, I'm going to come back and say you can raise it, but how are you going to raise this? You're not organized. So we like to tell them those questions beforehand so that they don't go through the whole thing without trying to solve these problems as early as possible.
Yeah.
And then the final item on this 6-item list is timing. So by that I mean, is it when is the right time to start a campaign based on a lot of factors, including do you have the prospects we just talked about? What else is going on in your community? What are the economic circumstances? And then once you started, when do you do like a public and a quiet and a public phase of your campaign? And actually, how long does the campaign go? And how long are the pledge periods that you'll accept gifts for? So there's a lot of issues regarding timing that we help people sort out.
A lot to think about. I'm exhausted just hearing the list.
Yeah. Well, that's what keeps us in business, because there's a lot. And we've been thinking about this stuff, myself for about 30 years. So, I'm quite facile at figuring out these details, and my team are as well. So but let's transition from that to like what makes the most powerful campaign. Can I, does that sound like a good idea?
It certainly sounds like a great idea.
Okay. So I had alluded to this idea of the future and the importance of the case. Mm. And I think that I'm going to assume that your audience knows something about major gift fundraising as a topic. And by that I mean, when an organization is not in a capital campaign period and they want to engage their most financially capable individual donors, we suggest that they organize and implement a major gift program, meaning that they're figuring out what the largest gifts they can raise from individuals are, and they have a methodology to do that throughout the year. This is not news to you, I'm sure.
Correct.
Good. So when organizations are doing that, we like to have them do that in a, I wouldn't say relaxed manner, but not urgent, hurried manner, meaning that their first and sometimes even second meetings with donors are informational, building relationships, hearing a lot from the donors, what they think about their organization, which is something many people forget because they kind of get in a meeting and they're like, me, 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 this is our organization, this is what we do. And, frankly, you're going to learn the most and have the best conversation if you do as much listening as possible.
It's such the big thing I see with my clients, and I have been blessed to be able to start to do some interim work and be on site with clients over the years and really get to know the gift officers and the culture and day-to-day what goes on. And they are under so much pressure to raise cash. It's like such a fine line between serving the donor, letting them dictate what they want to support, and having that pressure of, man, we need to build this new cancer unit. And it's a big goal, and I am under a lot of pressure to raise that. And I'm going to go out and just, if I can get in front of somebody, I'm going to make the ask because I may not get another visit with them. And I'm going to ask them to support the cancer research center, even though I don't know if they care as much about that as maybe something else. Do you have any, I know you speak a lot and you have so many good ideas around this kind of stuff.
This is exactly where I'm going, Joe. And so I started by talking about major gifts, and then I want to transition to how that's applicable to campaigns. But the The thing there is that for many, I don't want to say all situations, because actually cancer care is an interesting one where because of the intensity of it, people tend often give money quicker. But for most situations, you want to do something that's kind of paradoxical, which is you want to hurry up, you want to slow down so you can hurry up, meaning that you want to take one or two meetings to build a relationship so that you can then make a more powerful ask. So that's what, when we're working with organizations that are not doing campaigns and we're helping them build major gift programs, that's our basic strategy. So now if we put ourselves in the mindset of, okay, that's the cultivation process for major gifts when you're not in a campaign, what actually happens when you are in a campaign? Well, the challenge is, kind of like you were just talking about, you need to raise a lot of money in a limited period of time. And in many cases, your donor base knows that this project is going on. They've at least heard a little something about it. And even if they haven't, when you email or call them, or these days sometimes even text to try to set up a face-to-face meeting with them, you're not pretending that you're not going to want to talk about a campaign. Yeah. So they at least know about it then. And if they're among the segment of your population that's able to make the largest gifts to make this thing happen, most likely they're going to know why you're calling them and what you want, which is, it's not donuts or anything, it's money. So,
well, coffee and donuts would be nice.
Yeah, but coffee and donuts, you know, sure. that's like an extra, and hopefully you'll pay for it and you won't make them pay for it. So how do you do this in a campaign mode where, you know, it seems like you don't have the luxury of that cultivation period, and people are already primed for, okay, this, you know, this is what they're coming for. So if they agree to meet with you, that's an amazing first step. I'm just going to tell you what I think about this, and I'm going to go back to the case support for support, because it's crucial, is that, you need to right from how you first reach out to them about the campaign. And we do a lot of work with people on how do you get the meeting? And that's not something I'm going to address in today's conversation, but that's a whole nother subject. But let's assume that you've gotten a meeting to sit down with somebody who could potentially be a big donor to this campaign. The impulse is often to say, you know, here's our beautiful case for support. Here's our need. You're so, you know, important in our community. Can you please give us $100,000? Now, there's nothing wrong with that. And sometimes that actually works really well. But let me ask you a question, Joe. If you go to a meeting, let's say it's somebody who the organization has had as a donor, but not as a you know, one of the biggest donors over the years, and they you're going to ask them for $100,000, and you go, and in that first meeting you ask them for $100,000, and they say, wow, sure, I'm going to do that. What do you think? Tell me something about what you think that means.
Well, not that I can't go back, but I could have maybe asked for more if I spent more time working with them and figuring out what they're really passionate about and their vision.
Yes. So let me give you a quick example. So we have a organization we're working with in New England that has, there's a multi-billionaire who is one of their, you know, in their community. And they know her fairly well, but they haven't, they don't sit down with her on a regular basis. And the head of the campaign and the sort of the main volunteer went out and met with her, and they really wanted to just, they're like, well, it's going to be difficult to get another meeting. This is something you brought up earlier. We should definitely ask her for a gift in this meeting.
Yeah.
And it took me 4 phone calls. I finally prevailed. So, I said, do not ask for a gift. You know each other, but you've never really sat down like this before. Have a conversation. Make that conversation mostly be listening to her about what she thinks about your community and your organization. And they were like, they went and they did that. They were like, we went to her office. It was clear that, you know, this office was all about where she does her philanthropy. She had a lot of really good questions. It became obvious that if we asked for a gift, then we would get it, but it would not be, they were looking for a $1 to $2 million gift. And they thought that if they asked, then, you know, they would probably get like $100,000 or something. So they really saw the power of slowing down to hurry up.
Mm. Do you play golf?
I do not. I've played golf once, Joe.
Just once? Wow.
And they don't want me back there based on the green.
It can be a very frustrating game. And I like to use that analogy. I always get mixed up which is which. But like with football as an example, like if you wanted to, you play football and you wanted to get better results, you can try harder. You can hit harder. You can run faster. It takes strategy, of course. It takes a lot of skill sets. But you can try harder. With golf, it seems, as an amateur, and friends of mine who play as well, the harder you try, the harder you swing, the faster you swing, the harder you try to get results quickly, the worse you do. It's like self-defeating self-defeating prophecy? I'm not saying that right.
Something. You've got two different metaphors there, there's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right. Yeah, and self-defeating.
I think
slow it down. It's counterintuitive because I want to try harder. I want to swing. I want to hit the crap out of that ball, but that's just going to make it worse. I need to slow down my temperament and be patient. It's like the old, I'm really dating myself. Like there was a show in the 70s, Kung Fu, David Carradine, and he would go to get the guy that he would go to. But it was like kind of that spiritual of, you know, the...
Yeah, he would give him advice, grasshopper.
Yeah, grasshopper, slow down. Don't try so hard sometimes. And it's counterintuitive and you're under pressure. And the boss is saying, did you get the check? Did you raise any money today?
Right. Yeah, so this is the whole predicament and challenge of a capital campaign. And what we're finding is that the nonprofits we're working with are not only raising the biggest gifts they have ever raised by using this strategy, but many of their donors are making their largest gifts to philanthropy, which is really exciting for us. And so let me say a little bit more about, I haven't really outlined this specifically as a technique. I'm just kind of dancing around it. So let me continue to dance a bit here. There's one other important thing I want to note is that, you know, I gave an example of this person who you might go in and ask for $100,000 right away, but if you waited, you might get more. And so we want that first conversation about the campaign to be very focused on the potential donor and what they think of your community or your project. And what I want to say to everybody who's listening is that applies even to your board members most of the time, because even though most of the organizations we work with, they know their board members really well, but they haven't had this particular conversation with them. So that means that it's kind of like this is a new topic. You can't just assume that the relationship is strong enough around money and fundraising to ask them for their largest gift. Mm. So you need to have a bit of a conversation there. But the challenge, and this is what I really want to get across, is the challenge in a capital campaign is what I was saying before, is that people know that it's a campaign that if they agree to meet you, you're going to ask them for money and they're expected to give money. So you can't take two or three meetings to lead up to the ask. So there's two different main strategies that we use. I want to outline these quickly and then again go back to the case because it's super crucial. Yeah. And this stuff it's all exciting to me. So the first strategy we use is, regardless of what else happens in that first meeting, you need to spend significant time listening to the potential donor about their views on your organization and campaign. And you need to outline what the campaign intends to do financially, and you need to do one of two or three things. In a lot of campaigns, we have people ask in that first meeting, but they've asked after having this listening conversation, and they also, we train them so they're adept enough to know whether they need to delay that ask to next time. Mm. And if so, strategy number one is you key up the ask, but in a, you know, in a strategic way, so you actually do it in that meeting. Strategy number two is that you you give them a hint of, you know, you bring the your nice case for support and a gift table, and you say, you know, we're and there's a bunch of ways you can do this, but you could say something like, you know, I would love to come back and talk to you next month. And I'm hoping we can talk about a gift in the major gift level. And that's, you know, that's so there'd be a number of gifts on the gift table in that. Or you can say, you know, we're right now, you don't even have to direct it at the person. You can say, you know, right now we're talking to potential donors who we hope will consider gifts in the major gift level. That's the second strategy. The third thing, which I love, which is kind of what that organization in New England I spoke about a few minutes ago did, was particularly for somebody who has a lot of capability and may jump in. You think that, you know, when I meet with this person, they're going to short circuit me by saying, you know what, I've decided I'm giving $25,000 this campaign. I'm really excited. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh my God, I was going to ask for $500. So now none of these strategies are foolproof because we're, you know, we're dealing with human beings here. So and things come up in meetings. But what we suggest is that for a situation like that, right at the start of the meeting, you say, you know, look, we're here to discuss, you know, our capital campaign and the future of our organization and the future of our community and your views on this. But we specifically don't want to ask you for a gift today. And in fact, even if you had a gift in mind, we'd like you to wait and hold off on that until another conversation. And that tends to work really well.
It's great.
So let's switch now perhaps for, you know, the last part of our conversation here, unless there's other things that come up, is how does the case for support fit into this whole thing? And I'm going to tell you. So we put a lot of attention into making sure that the case for support, A, does not put you to sleep, and B, has a visceral vision for the future of your community. And let me start by just giving you an example of what not to do. One of our potential nonprofit clients who we ended up not working with, in our conversations about their campaign, they gave us a copy of the case that a previous consulting firm had written for them. Now, this was a K-12 school. And the cover of the case document was I can't remember the name for it. It's like a blue-gray toned photo of the front of the school building. When you opened up the case, you got a table of contents that was like, I don't know, like 20 something pages. Then you flipped another page and there were a few pictures, and then you got to the first paragraph. And the first paragraph was, I don't remember it verbatim, but it was like, you know, there comes a time in the history of every organization when, and I'm like, I'm already asleep. And they had clearly taken a boilerplate from their other consulting clients and put it in here. But the thing that got me as much or more than that first paragraph was that this was a school. The cover of the case had a picture of the building in almost gray with not a single human being, let alone a kid. And then the first few pictures, there were, I think, three pictures on the next page. One of them had a kid in it, but their back was towards you. So I'm thinking like, okay, so this is what not to do in a case. What you need to do is you need to figure out how this campaign is going to provide a more powerful future for the community that you serve. Now, notice that I'm not saying for your organization, because your organization is not the hero of the story of a capital campaign. It's the community you serve, however you define that. If you're a school or a university, it's your students and your faculty if it's a university, the research, et cetera. You know, if you're a social service organization, it's the people in your community. If you're a religious organization, it's your congregants. If you're an environmental organization, it's our planet or your forest or whatever. So people often get confused because they start talking about their organization, but your organization is, forgive me, but a little bit irrelevant in a case. Obviously, you're going to say a lot about it eventually, but you need to start with the powerful future that your community is going to have as a result of this campaign. Because otherwise, what's the point? Why should people bother to give money?
And don't you think that comes back to the whole competition. Like everybody's trying to raise a ton of money and donors are getting to the point where it's like, okay, here's another one.
Right. So how do you excite them? You talk about this vision for the future for the community. You hear and listen to them about what's important to them. And, you know, then the money will flow from that. If it's exciting, if you've presented it in an exciting way and it's exciting to them. And so what we suggest is that you need to figure out how that future connects to this campaign. And then in every meeting, you need to describe that. And one of the things we find is that it's not many organizations that connection of the campaign to the future, it's not inherently obvious. So we work with them when we help them write the case. We work with them on what is that? Because, you know, you need to step out of your day-to-day, like, oh my God, I got to do this. I got to do that. I'm the executive director. I'm the development director. I'm the board chair. You know, you have to step out of that to really contemplate this stuff to and then figure out how to articulate it so that it then becomes really powerful and exciting.
It's good stuff, Peter.
Yeah. So I think you can see that, you know, a well-crafted capital campaign is about much more than simply going and sitting down with people and asking for money. And, you know, we haven't used the term transactional in this conversation yet, but that's what we're trying to get away from. It's like, okay, people think, okay, it's a campaign. So if I can get a meeting, I'm just going to go sit down. Maybe I'll even bang my fist on the table and say, you know, hey, we need your $100,000. Are you in? And there's a lot of people who are, you know, kind of tough business folks who are like, that's how, you know, your board member who that's how I'm going to do this. Well, we like to not change anybody's personality or who they are. We try to meet people at who they are. Not everybody's going to ask in the same way, but we try to get them to engage in conversations about a community's future and be aware of all these factors that we've discussed.
Well, that's a lot of work and things to think about on their own. Are there consultants out there that can help people with this? this is the setup.
Gee, here. Joe.
Do they have, you guys no, don't do that, do you?
I don't think so. you can learn more about our view on this on our website, which, as I said earlier, is the Heller Fundraising Group. Without the hellerfundraisinggroup.com. We just relaunched our website. We like it a lot. There's a bunch of fun things on there, including our just launched series, the Outrageous Fortune video interview series, which I know you've seen. Thank you.
Really well done. That. Almost as good as ours, but yes.
Yeah,
good.
Well, you know, almost is a high bar.
Equally as good as ours.
Yeah, high bar. I don't have as nice of a background.
I got that on Amazon for $20.
Yes, very nice. And we're, you know, we're available to chat with anybody about what they want to do with their campaign.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we should probably think about maybe doing another one at some point.
As you can tell, I love talking. So happy to do that. And also, as I mentioned, that we do have some webinars and in-person events coming up this fall. So if you look on the website, we have events listed. Including that Foundation Center training I mentioned.
And just for the record, that's 2019. We are
in 2019. Yes.
We are.
I think, still.
Indeed. Yeah. Well, Peter, thank you. Incredibly informative, interesting, and really appreciate you adding value to our programs.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Until next time.
Thank you for listening to the Gift Planning Development Podcast. For more information on any of the topics you've heard about today, please go to giftplanningdevelopment.com.